Hello, airport industry folks. Welcome to the AX Insider podcast, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Andy Telejohn, the senior writer at Airport Experience News. This podcast will be part of our 20 Years, 20 Voices series celebrating the upcoming 20th AX conference. During these calls, we're talking with industry veterans who've overseen the evolution of the concessions industry over the last two decades and change. Today, we're talking with Paul Brown, Senior Director of Airport Brands and Concepts with SSP America. Thanks for taking some time, Paul.
My pleasure, Andy. Nice to see you.
It's great talking with you again. Paul, you joined SSP a little over a year ago, but you have over the years had a wide range of experiences and roles in the industry, from running a small airport yourself to overseeing concessions at Hartsfield-Jackson, the largest airport in the U.S. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about the very beginnings of your career and what appealed to you about getting into airports in the first place.
I think that's a good question, because this is going to dovetail with perhaps a later discussion on where I see the industry today. I only managed to get into airport concessions because of a coworker that was working with me when I was at Pizza Hut. Long time ago, Pizza Hut used to be part of PepsiCo, and I was overseeing a territory doing what they called asset management, which basically meant you were sort of a real estate junkyard dog, if you will. You basically had the responsibility to not just build new restaurants, but as an asset manager, which sounded great, you had the responsibility to do asset dispositions, real estate sales, real estate acquisitions, difficult workouts with landlords, no matter where they are. And then as a special treat for the cherry on top, my job was also to do lease renegotiations for, I believe, over 80 different individual restaurants in the Northeast. So I cut my teeth pretty early in terms of commercial real estate in my career. But one of my clients, internal clients, told me about this great headhunter who was looking for people to go work at Marriott. And I said, not really into hotels. I mean, thanks very much. I'm just not really into it. She goes, no. It's we're talking about airports. I said, now, are you talking about airport hotels? Said, no, Marriott runs restaurants. It's some sort of host thing. I'm like, oh, okay, well, all right. So I took a flyer on it, and needless to say, about four different job interviews later for four completely different positions, Bob Stanton, who still works with us here at SSP America, is one of our business leaders, said to me, and I didn't think I was making an impression on the guy during the interview, by the way, but he says, hey, I think I got a job for you. And what he said was, I could go and take over the operation at Reagan National Airport. And for HMS Host, what is now HMS Host, but at the time was Host Marriott Services, they didn't have a lot of leasing background. So I was hired to be basically their landlord representative on that airport, manage a portfolio of 30 to 40 different individual tenant leases, and hopefully help grow that expertise within the four walls of Host Marriott Services. I ended up staying there 5 years. It was a terrific experience. I learned a lot. I really enhanced my toolbox and learned about the difference between leasing on the street for commercial real estate and leasing inside the airport.
Yeah, what, you mean they're not the same thing?
Oh my God. To be clear, Reagan National Airport was just one of the finest facilities in the country over time, in my opinion, at least, was a great learning ground, because they had some of the, at the time, they had some of the most one-sided leases that you would ever come across, with percentage rents as high as 25%, that also included a profit-sharing kicker at the end. And I'm just like, wow, I don't understand how we're making any money off of this, but or anybody else for that matter. The rents were somewhat exorbitant, depending on the categories, very complicated and convoluted, and like a lot of other leases today, somewhat based on the merchandise assortment in the case of retail, and in the case of food and beverage, usually very high rental percentages for alcoholic beverages. So that was my first experience with it. And I also got to experience it from the other side, trying to recruit tenants into the airport from the street, and then having to explain to them why they should be so excited about 20%+ rent and how it was going to be the best thing that ever happened to them. So got used to hearing no, but also got used to hearing maybe, and then basically trying to get people to yes. But Jim Baranio was a big influence at that time, the late, great Jim Baranio, who was one of our executive vice presidents and host at the time. What a great teacher, very patient with me and allow me to make mistakes, which in the early part of your year, that's kind of how you learn. You got to be able to make the mistakes and then, sure.
Sure. That makes sense. So, I mean, airports aren't an easy place for folks coming off the street who don't have background in operating in airports to get into even today with the rents you're talking about and the challenges you just discussed. What were a couple of your best selling points to actually get folks to go from maybe to yes back in the early days of this concessions evolution?
Well, you know, that's a tough question because really there's only one, well, not only one, but there's one big constant that extends to brands coming into airports off the street, and that is the opportunity to have a living billboard that advertises to millions of people a year that you'd never otherwise see or may never otherwise see. And the opportunity to participate in something that will take your brand from being known in a small circle of people to perhaps being known nationwide or even worldwide. That's a wonderful exchange. Is it worth the rent? I don't know. I think each brand has to make that decision for themselves, but it's a wonderful opportunity to get your brand in front of many people, actually hone your brand, because airports require, in this case of food and beverage, a specialized menu that's usually a subset of what people would serve on the street. And then a chance to build a repeat business that touches a lot of different people. Yes, you end up with repeat customers if you're able to execute with a certain degree of precision and accuracy. But at the same time, those people will be loyal customers to you both in the airport and on the street. And that's a unique opportunity that other travel venues and other special or right, let's call it, non-traditional venues, they don't necessarily offer that.
Sure. Okay. That makes sense. So you did that for a few years and as you said, got a nice well-rounded education on the industry around that.
Oh yeah.
Then you moved on, you spent a couple of years in Chicago and then down in Atlanta at W.H. Smith. As the evolution was taking place, you hear all these stories about the old days when it was hot dogs on a spit and cardboard pizza, no brands, things like that. You were working with some of the bigger name airports and some of the bigger name operators in the industry at the time. Was that your experience as you were getting in, and what started to create the evolution that has become what the airport concessions programs are today?
Yeah, that's a good question, Andy. And when I started, not to back up the host, but I'll tell you why that experience was so unique, because not only was it a leased property, so we had to function as a landlord, but we took over for a concept called Innovative Air Courts, which Innovative Air Courts developed the food court in the interim terminal and used an approach that's, pretty popular today, going out, finding brands from the outside and adapting those brands for an airport in an attempt to get away from the cardboard pizzas, the fries that have been in the hot hold for far too long, and other types of food service inadequacies. So in taking that over, I automatically got an education in some of the better ways to do things and ways to serve the customer in a way that's superior to what had been done in the past, getting away from some of the stock brands that we had really gotten used to seeing at airports in the 80s, not to denigrate my old company, Pizza Hut, but I had some less than stellar experiences leading up to my experience in Reagan National. So by the time I got to Chicago, the industry had already started to evolve, and we were building food courts that are more modern, also bringing in brands that are more indicative of a higher level of experience on the street. We still had some trouble attracting high-end casual dining experiences and fine dining experiences, but it was still a good experience in terms of being able to apply what I had learned and to kind of keep going. And this computer is very loud. Sorry about that.
Okay. So, one thing that sort of jumped out at me here as you were talking through some of these experiences, you started out outside the airport industry, came in, and like many others that have gotten into this industry from the outside, you've never left. A lot of different roles over the years, but what is it that's kind of kept you in the industry and continuing on in various aspects of the airport concessions realm when you could have taken those experiences that you gained and probably gone a lot of different places with it?
That's a tough question. You know, I'm fond of saying, and whether it's accurate or not, I'm fond of saying that I'm Gilligan. You know, I can't get off the island.
Okay.
I don't have the bucket hat right now, but I've spent so much time here that to go somewhere else would necessitate me throwing away years of applied learning in this particular segment. But the better answer is you got to love this industry. You got to love what you're doing in order to stay in it, to take the hits that the industry gives to you, whether it's in RFPs in which you're not selected, or whether it's in having to deliver bad news to other concessionaires, whether it's representing brands and trying to get them into airports and failing multiple times before you can finally succeed. It's a tough road, and there are limited spaces available. There are only so many airports out there, and those airports only have so much space. And appealing to the proclivities of these decision-making committees is a guessing game. I talked to a new person in the industry just a few minutes ago who told me that he likes this industry, representing a very fine brand. He says he likes this industry because it's more like playing chess instead of playing checkers. It's not as easy as going out and finding a location and opening up and hoping people walk in. You have to do a lot more intensive planning than that. So for all you folks out there who aren't part of the airport industry, if you want to supercharge your mind and begin to think what I like to call asymmetrically, thinking in ways that aren't necessarily easily duplicated by the competition. And that's what this is all about. It's a tough industry, but it does grow on you.
I like it. Looking at the challenges that we've been talking about for a number of years as a challenge rather than an impediment. That's probably not a bad way to look at it when you're getting into things here. We're talking today with Paul Brown, Senior Director of Airport Brands and Concepts with SSP America. You, in between some of these different roles you've had, you took a couple of different stints as Paul Brown Consulting, working largely with brands, a lot of smaller companies. What appealed to you about that? Getting small businesses into the airport, you've already talked about the challenges of bringing them in from the airport side. When you're actually representing the brands, what was appealing to you about that, taking on that role?
Well, I'm going to give some credit right now to a good friend of mine who's still in the industry. She probably doesn't know I'm going to say this, but Karen Marante,
okay,
formerly of Unison Consulting. I worked alongside her when I was the executive director for ARM, and she was one of the star consultants attacking RFPs throughout the country. And when I left SeaTac, the first thing I thought was, wow, what's next for me? I mean, I had somebody with whom I was already working and helping them perfect their business, but she came up with the idea of becoming an airport concessions consultant. She said, why don't you do that? That's something that you know very well. And I'll bet you have a decent Rolodex of people you could start with. And I said, wow, that sounds very interesting. And I never thought of myself as a hustler, you know, somebody who could get out there, wake up early, you know, have a plan, attack things. At that point, I still had the administrator type of hangover where you basically are letting the business come to you. And that's, believe me, that's nice work if you can get it. And it's not as easy as it sounds. But at the same time, realizing that you have to kill in order to eat, it makes a big difference. And no one's serving those opportunities up to you. You have to go out and go get them. So I started doing that, and I started having a lot of difficulty with already established brands, which naturally pushed me over to two important subsets. And I'm sure a lot of other consultants could attest to this. Number one, your own Rolodex. I had to depend on businesses with whom I had already established previous relationships. And perhaps the most important of those was Carrie Crewe and Massage Bar. I worked for Massage Bar for 8 years and helped them expand their brand through a lot of different airports. And I'm very grateful for that opportunity. Aaron Humphreys was part of that team way back when as well.
Oh, sure.
But the other outfit or the other bucket that gave me a lot of help was looking for people not yet in the industry who had just invented the new mousetrap, if you will. Folks who had come up with ideas that would be great for air travelers, retail and food and beverage ideas that had not yet hit the mainstream of the airport segment. And maybe the most significant in that area would be Minute Suites. I started working with Minute Suites before they were in the airport. I assisted them in getting their business off the ground in terms of proving the viability of the airport segment to their investors through Dan Solomon. And then eventually helped secure some locations with them. They just began to take off right when I got the opportunity to go and work with Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport. But okay. That was a very interesting experience. And then when I returned to consulting later on, after having been concessions director, it was much easier to find clients then. Then you had to be a little bit more choosy. But that's almost just as hard as finding things from scratch.
Interesting. So, how did you go about finding some of these gems that hadn't been in the industry yet? This is the direction things were moving. Every airport's trying to find its own little local way of standing out. Everybody's looking for some small business participation, ACDB participation. Did you have a secret or two that helped you go and find, some of these untapped gems that started to open up and pop up during your time there?
Well, that's a good question. I have to give some credit to Pauline Armbrust, the founder of Airport Revenue News. At the time, it was Airport Revenue News. I know it's Airport Experience now. And even before that, it even had a different name, but
Airport Retail News.
Yes, it did. But going to the conferences and socializing with people, bringing materials with you if you needed to, and being able to present your business proposition to people was a big part of that. Because even though I may not have met a potential client at the show, you usually met somebody who knew somebody who still knew somebody else who was that person who was working in his or her basement, coming up with the next really cool cosmetics line or coming up with the next food and beverage alternative that was going to knock people off, off their feet. But that networking really did a lot. And the other thing that probably was just as impactful, if not more impactful, was doing the best possible work I could for the few clients that I had. Because that gave you word of mouth, and that not only does it give you word of mouth and contacts, but it gives you the certification that you're a viable alternative, to getting things done. The third thing I'll say is, and this doesn't apply to everybody because I know some other consultants out there who charge a really nice retainer, and I don't know how they're able to get those retainers, but look, I was inexpensive. I mean, I was trying to establish my business. And so I was willing to set up incentive payments, also lower initial fees, certainly lower retainers. And I also was willing to work on a shorter time frame. Instead of trying to get people to commit to me for a year, which almost never happened in the early days, I would get people to commit for me from 2 to 3 months. And if I couldn't get them the location, I'd at least give them a business plan and some direction about where to go next. And the other thing, you know, the last part is just don't take this stuff too seriously and don't be afraid to lose a client. Keep your integrity. That's something they can never take away from you.
Sure, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Paul Brown, Senior Director of Airport Brands and Concepts with SSP America. You brought up the time you spent in Atlanta as concessions director there. Biggest airport, busiest airport in America. Give me a couple of thoughts on what that was like. I know you did a couple of concessions overhauls during that time. Always something going on there. What kind of an experience was that?
Great airport. Right away when you start looking at it from the inside, not that you can't see this from the outside, but you realize that you're the world's busiest airport, but being the world's busiest airport has very little to do with you. It has everything to do with the people that came 30 years and plus before with that dramatic decision to lay out parallel terminals, equidistant from each other, all the same length, with parallel runways on the outside. The reason why they keep getting this efficient airport award is, yes, the airlines there are very good. Delta is the primary airline there and does a terrific job serving its passengers. But the other thing is the real estate. You only have so far to go to get from a terminal to the movement area. And it's very easy to get from one end of the runway to the other. Now they've built the turnarounds and everything. It's a tremendously well-engineered airport from the start. So once you get past that whole world's busiest airport thing, the question is, how do you design a program that's going to serve everyone's needs? And I was lucky. I had Kent Vandenhoever, who is now with Fraport, helping me as a consultant with air projects. And he just did an absolute bang up job of running the numbers for us. So it became very easy to go through the layout and figure out where the most productive real estate was and where some of the most challenging real estate was. And then we laid out the concepts accordingly. Believe it or not, setting up the program in the beginning, if there is an easy part, was the easy part. The harder part was defending the results of the committees and getting city council to sign off on it. Wow. That was life changing, but it was successful. I survived it. After roughly the better part of a year on trial, and whatnot, Those are some of the hazards, though, of trying to do a good job and trying to do the best for the passengers, because not everybody's going to agree with you. You have to be able to accept that.
And at the end of the day, the doing the best for the passengers is what will get you the bigger spends and provide all those numbers that help you back things up over time.
That's right.
In a lot of those airports, the politics certainly start to play a role after a time. So
they do.
That certainly a challenge today and yesterday.
Yes.
That led to your couple of years as the director in Jackson. You've seen large airports. You've seen small airports. How are some of the smaller airports out there, you know, doing in terms of their evolving with the times and keeping up with, some of this evolution we've been discussing, and what was that experience like?
You know, small airports are going to benefit going forward, I believe, from market evolution. We're going to see more players, both large and small, chasing after small airports because the economics are different. In some ways, yes, I agree with some. Small airports may seem like they're not worth chasing because of the relatively low total airport volume, and also the susceptibility to changes in the route development of the different airlines. But the reward in terms of profitability on a unit basis can be pretty strong. As long as airport managers/directors, executives don't overdevelop the real estate, it can be a very profitable, very enriching type of setup, both for the passengers and for the small businesses that operate in them and the larger businesses that undertake them. Now, there was a long time ago when some of the larger concessionaires had that as a key part of their development strategy, was to attack the smaller airports because you had more of a chance of garnering monopoly power. And that monopoly power allows you to have certain economies of scale in terms of the income statement. But right now, there's a new breed of concessionaires that, you know, thanks to AXN, thanks to AAAE, thanks to ACI and all of the networking events that fill in the spaces in between, they've become much more versed in the opportunities. They're learning how to bid these opportunities. They're getting qualified help to help them win these opportunities. And so some of the smaller airports now are seeing a little bit more of a diversified set of operators. And I look for that to continue going forward. I think our industry, as the larger firms have gotten large and continue to get large, and I know I'm working for a large firm right now, you know, the challenge for us is to stay current, continue to put together winning packages and successfully compete against this new wave of smaller, quite well-informed entrants into our industry. It's very exciting.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, great. Want to just touch on one of the customers and clients that you were taking on when you were working out there on your own. Meant to ask this a minute ago, but were ACDBE companies. ACDBE Airports Concessions Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Program. Helped create some level playing field, some opportunities for small minority and women-owned businesses over the years. Wondering if you could just touch a little bit on how that part of the business has evolved and what, if all, your thoughts are with some of these Supreme Court rulings that have come out recently in terms of, you know, starting to spin this forward a little bit. What does the future of small business and minority-owned business in airports look like?
Well, it's interesting that ACDB participation and certification is now top of mind with anyone on a governmental level, when unfortunately it really had been left neglected for a very long time, even after having been established. And I'm talking about things like personal net worth restrictions that needed to be expanded a long time ago and never kept pace with the consumer price index. And now there's obviously the political might in place to be able to strike down a lot of the program when it never was really allowed to grow to its fullest potential and never allowed to really keep pace with the economy in the first place. So I think it's far too early. I'm probably revealing a little bit of my political alignment in that with that kind of a statement, but I understand that how the Supreme Court is currently comprised and what the majority of that voting block is comprised of. So I think, you know, you're going to continue to see that as long as things remain status quo, with politics being so divisive and one side really trying to succeed at the expense of the other. I think it's far too early to disband the program and to declare it unconstitutional and whatnot. I think if anything, some of the steps to expand the program to include small business opportunities were well-minded and well-intended, but unfortunately people have overinterpreted that as the lack of a need for the ACDB program as it was previously comprised. People of color, people of indigent status, people at one point, Vietnam veterans were part of that. I know they're a little older now and maybe not able to compete anymore, and are certainly expanding opportunities for women. If anyone looks at disparity studies with salaries right now and opportunities, it's fun to celebrate the women and people of color who are at the top of the corporate ladder in these various and sundry Fortune 500 companies, but it's far from representative of the populace and the contributions that each of those groups makes to the overall whole. Women are still underrepresented, still underpaid. People of color are still underrepresented, still underpaid. So those divisions continue to exist. And I think we still need the ACDBE program. I think, though, yeah, and thank you, people like Leon Watkins, Clark Sharp, those who brought that program to light in the first place. Thanks to them, we have the program. But now there's a lot more people out there who understand the value, understand what the program does for society as a whole, and how it makes us as a nation appear, really, quite frankly, to other nations who don't have programs like that and still have people who are operating at the margins of society. So I think it still has value, and I'd like to continue to support that program.
Thank you. We're talking with Paul Brown today, Senior Director of Airport Brands and Concepts with SSP America. You've recently joined SSP America. You've gone full circle, starting out your career in airports with Host. What got you back at SSP, and how are things going with that gig today?
It's a great experience. I'm very grateful to Pat Murray, Pat Carroll, Michael Svagdis for bringing me on the team. It's a way different experience. I mean, in this go round, I'm considered to be part of the executive team, and a lot of my work now is outward facing. Whereas at Marriott or Host Marriott Services years ago, I was in operations. And I was basically taking care of my own little nest, so to speak, very inward facing, building a staff and looking out for concessionaires. Now I actually represent SSP America to other entities. It's my job to get out, meet people, create opportunities for us in branding and concepts that are going to yield value to the company over the years. I do a lot of travel. I meet a lot of people, and I communicate a lot of what I find back to the internal organization for their approval, for their comment, and hopefully for their use as we go out and try to win contracts throughout North America. It's a great opportunity. I'm very lucky to have that opportunity right now. I will say again, it's a little different than being an administrator and waiting for things to come to you. I have to set an alarm clock and wake up in the morning and get out and meet people and try to keep commitments representing SSP as best I possibly can. I've grown a lot doing this job. If you ever think you know everything, just go out and try a different job for a while, and that'll bring you back to earth real fast. But it's a terrific
learning.
Yeah, you gotta keep learning, you gotta keep growing, grow or die. That's what they say. And I'm enjoying this experience. It's been I've been very lucky to get the opportunity to work with the folks at SSP America there. They're just fantastic. And some of them I've known for as many as 30 years. But there's a lot of people here that I didn't know before. And it's great to work alongside them and to help us, try to achieve this goal of serving the passenger, trying to make things exciting, bringing our passion and creating authentic culinary experiences out there in the world. So it's a great experience. Loving it.
Kind of bringing things full circle, you and Bob Stanton again, and you've got the power of one of the concessions heavyweights on your side as well. So good stuff, Paul. Thank you for the time. Anything you'd like to add that we haven't talked about?
I guess to turn the tables on you all, I think that I've enjoyed watching the evolution of AX and seeing where you are today. I think that your interviews have gotten better, even Andy. You've learned as well. You know what to ask, and you know how to poke the bear at the right time. I'm really proud to be associated with AX, both now and in the future, and I look forward to making more contributions as time goes on. But thank you so much.
Thank you for the time, Paul. It's great catching up with you.